Hello, innovators, explorers, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. I'm your host, Sam Kamani. I'm an Amazon best-selling author and ex-startup founder, as well as advisor to multiple Web3 and Web2 startups. I'm here to take you through a journey of Web3 so that you know what new innovations are coming in this space. And to do that, today I'm going to be interviewing Vincent Wu. Vincent is a veteran in this space. He is building a DeFi platform called Hover. So let's learn everything about DeFi, liquidity aggregators, and where the state of the current DeFi markets are at. Nothing in this podcast should be taken as investment advice. We are just having a discussion on the technical state of the industry. And if you're interested in knowing more about DeFi and liquidity aggregators, borrowing, lending protocols, and so on, this is the episode for you. I do not run ads on this platform. My only ask is that you share this episode with a friend and leave a rating or a review on whichever platform you are listening this on. So with that out of the way, let's get into it. Vincent, it's great to have you on the show. So looking forward to talking with you. And especially now that I know that you are one of the OGs in this space, have so many things to talk about, and especially also talk about Hover and what you guys are building there. So first, let's get started with your background in crypto. How did you get involved in crypto?
Yeah, a bit of background about myself. My past life was in M&A advisory, sell side investment banking. I got into crypto around 2016. This is when I did a few startups in the ICO due diligence space. I worked with a lot of the liquidity protocols in Canada. I also worked at centralized exchanges, one in Canada in particular, that's a regulated one called Virgo CX. And most recently, I worked at Crypto.com, leading their institutional sales efforts covering North America. Most of my counterparties were institutions and hedge funds of that sort. And I guess I found that background, along with my native Web3 background, was a good fit to build Hover.
You were just sharing earlier in the conversation that you got into crypto around 2016 or something like that, and you were looking at, someone was introducing you to Ethereum. Can you please continue from there?
Yeah, for sure. So I got into crypto around 2016. It wasn't nothing much. It was just, okay, there was an announcement that the first Bitcoin ATM was in a coffee shop pretty close to me. It's like, all right, might as well try it out. I remember it was pretty hard to get Bitcoin back then, right? When you had to either up your miner, and I was pretty scarred from, do you remember Butterfly Labs?
Yes.
Those are the times when I was looking into mining. Obviously, things happen with their equipment. So the ATM seemed like a pretty easy way to get some Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Did that, did the whole onboarding process, let's put some money in, out came your little paper wallet. And I guess did this a couple times. They call it DCA. And eventually
dollar cost averaging.
Like, yeah, exactly. And eventually someone was like, oh, have you heard about Ethereum? I was like, oh, what is that? Send me the white paper and all. I think this was after their ICO, I believe. Yeah, I was able to look at that. And for me, it just clicked. It makes sense for you to be able to use smart contracts in a way to have programmable functions.
Yeah.
And I was trying to explain it to my peers. It was more about programmable money. And then having contracts to be able to kind of create your own way of moving money or interacting with money. So that kind of caught my eye. And I did a few startups in the liquidity space and the IEO due diligence space.
Yeah.
And basically, it was just taking what I learned from due diligence and investment banking and applying that to ICOs. And from the 2016 to 2017 era, it was pretty popular to have an ICO. So for us, it was more about being able to evaluate network effects, being able to evaluate, what is this token utility? What does it actually do? Do you really need a token? And we tried to run that as like a business. And ever since ICOs died out in 2018, I started working with liquidity aggregators like Aquanow, one of the prominent businesses here in Canada. I also worked at centralized exchanges. I worked for a regulated Canadian exchange called Virgo CX. And most recently, I was at crypto.com leading their institutional sales efforts. I covered North America, worked with a lot of proprietary trading desks and hedge funds and of that sort. But I found out that my background in DeFi and my institutional markets background really helped for the developing something like Hover. And with chatting with a few of the team members, here I am today.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. So let's get started with Hover. And for someone who is, say, new to DeFi and all this, how do you describe a liquidity aggregator? What does that mean?
Liquidity aggregator just basically means, hey, instead of you buying your coins from Binance, for example, we'll give you a price, but this price is reflective of Binance, Bitforex, KuCoin, OKX, and we would just aggregate this liquidity and be able to provide that to you. So for example, you wanted to buy like $1 million worth of Bitcoin. If you were to buy that on somewhere like Binance, for example, all in one go, you would make the price move like 1%, maybe 1.5%. That's really not price efficient. So what we did at Aquanow as a liquidity aggregator was basically aggregate all these venues and then distribute your order across multiple different venues in order for you to get the best price. That's what a liquidity aggregator is.
Yeah, fantastic. And then how do you define Hover? Because when I was reading about Hover, it said it's like a non-custodial liquidity market protocol that facilitates lending, borrowing, and other things. Can you describe it for, say, someone who is new to DeFi? How does Hover come in the picture?
That's great that you asked that. We are a lending protocol that will be launched on the Kava network. We are looking to get some cross-chain support to cater to the entirety of the Cosmos ecosystem and more. We're similar to Aave and Compound, where we have lending and borrowing capabilities to the assets that are primarily on the Kava network instead of the ERC-20 ecosystem, for example. We're working closely with the Kava Foundation, and we're pretty much on track to be their main lending protocol on the network. Hover is a lending protocol. So what that allows you to do is that you're able to lend your assets for a certain percentage, but you're also able to borrow assets for a certain percentage. So this would be an interest rate, right? More simply put, that's what we allow you to do on Hover. And then the rates are basically determined by how much assets are in the liquidity and also what are the rates. There's something called a drop rate model that we use. And it basically just allows you to see the fees that you're basically paying or you're receiving algorithmically. But I guess like the fundamental thing is our smart contracts, right? Our smart contract algorithmically determines what rates that we give you. And we have this as like a chart on our application.
So say like I've got some Ethereum, I put money on Hover protocol using your smart contract, and I get whatever the algorithm decides, 5%, 8%, 12%, whatever that APY might be. Where does Hover get that return from, or how does Hover generate that return?
So basically we get our revenues from borrowers, right? And we incentivize the supplier of the assets with the borrower's fees that they pay in interest. And we also have distributed APY in the form of our own token as well. So in the end, the suppliers will get an APY that is determined on the distribution from either the revenues from the borrowers and from our platform as well, from emissions.
Fantastic. That makes it really clear. But there are lots of similar projects on the internet. Like there's so many borrowing lending protocols and so many DeFi projects. How is Hover different? Why should someone go for Hover instead of something else?
Okay. So I think for us, DeFi is built on across various chains, right? You have Ethereum, you have Binance Smart Chain, you have AVAX, and you also have Kava and Cosmos as different systems. So for us, what we felt like was important for a lot of these layer ones is that they have primitives. So DeFi primitives are kind of like the standards that all chains should have. For example, there's Aave and Compound on Ethereum. There's a Bankey on AVAX. And these are also, like you said, our lending protocols. right? We're launching one on Kava, which has around, they have, I think they, last time I checked, was 200 million in TVL. And that's, and they're part of the Cosmos ecosystem. So that makes them actually the one of the largest in terms of TVL on the Cosmos ecosystem. And they have a, and for us, we saw that there was a gap for a lending protocol on there that was on the EVM co-chain. So most recently, Kava announced that they are actually, like, they are building out their EVM chain, which means that it's more interoperable. It's easier for you to use it as a, like, a MetaMask user, because you're able to send addresses very similar to, like, ERC20 or something like that.
Yes.
So they announced that, and we saw that there was a gap in the marketplace for lending market on there. So for us, our team has built lending protocols on AVAX, lending protocols on Moonbeam. They've been relatively successful, and we're working closely with the Kava team to be able to build a lending protocol on the Kava EVM co-chain. And what makes us different right now is that for us, we felt like that most protocols, if you look at a lending protocol and you look at their token, for example, like, you think about, okay, what are you using the token for, right? Like, is it like, how can you make it a very usable token that incentivizes your users on the platform, right?
Yeah.
So the first thing that people think about is like, okay, we'll let you vote. We'll allow you to have some sort of considerable governance on our platform. Yes. And two, maybe they'll be like, okay, we'll also give you some tokens as a form of rewards on the platform. Mm. Or maybe it's like a lending, like a supplying assets, and we'll give you some tokens, like very similar to what I explained earlier. Or if you're a borrower and we're trying to decrease the amount that you borrow, we'll give you some sort of like a tokens back.
Mm.
So we figured that we can probably make this a bit more useful and help the ecosystem a bit more by being able to add different types of token economic systems. So what makes us different to the core is that we have completely different, like a completely different token economic model compared to other lending protocols that are out.
Yeah, I'm thinking as a user of DeFi, that what is it that would make me participate in a lending protocol? So the things that I would look for is that, A, is it safe and is it secure? Because it's DeFi, that's like first priority. Second is the APY. Is it competitive compared to the other protocols? Third is, towards the end, I would look at, okay, the other things such as like, as you were saying about the governance side of things and stuff, because for me, I want less friction, not more. I don't want one more thing to think about. And fourth, if there are airdrops and things like that, then that's a bonus. But I don't know, is there a fifth thing that people look at in your experience? What are the things people look at when they interact with a DeFi protocol or a lending protocol?
That's a pretty good question. I could probably answer it from like the Hover point of view and see if that kind of checks out. I mean, number one, safety, right? We have teams that have built multi-million dollar lending protocols before, and they're basically doing it again on the Kava network. We're getting our contracts being audited by Watchbug, a pretty reputable auditor in the space. So I mean, number one is safety, being able to evaluate that from not only the internal side, where you have like, oh, Docs team members or experienced team members. And you also have something from the protocol level where you have smart contracts done, smart contract audits being done. And you have basically these contracts harder to exploit or even impossible to exploit. So that's good on the safety side. And then when you're talking about looking at APYs, I think one of the things that you have to consider from the past DeFi summer is that, are these sustainable APYs?
Exactly right. That's what I mean as well. That pretty much it's like anything that's giving hundreds of or thousands of percent immediately, like everyone's spidey senses go up, something's wrong here, avoid this like plague, pretty much. Because anyone who's been in this industry for a while knows that those are unsustainable and it's just asking for trouble sooner or later.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's why we're building Hover on the Kava ecosystem. We feel like that there's a lot of assets that are being underutilized. There's a lot of opportunities for a lot of borrowers to come into the space, because like we're actually attending Nebular conference next week in Paris. And that And that conference has a lot of very interesting players in the space, right? DYDX, I think, is speaking there. Very interesting to see a perpetual thought platform deploy on a new blockchain, because that just means that, hey, there's going to be a lot of borrows from shorting. There's going to be a lot of supplied liquidity. And for us, that's a very good opportunity to provide APY and good yields to the retail user, because we're able to work with these protocols that are launching, see where their flows are from them operating their dApps and from them operating their DeFi protocols, and just being able to see, okay, how can we funnel this in terms of borrowing and supply? And when we're able to do that, we kind of create an ecosystem within Hover, within Kava. And then we're able to be like, okay, now we can actually supply these reasonable APYs that make sense as well, because now we're taking these functions from different protocols. And this is more so from like a protocol to protocol level engagement. And then we're allowing the, you know, different market participants to be able to participate. Because what's more important to us is that we have a lot of different borrowers. We have a lot of different asset suppliers, because it's not just one person that completely dominates the network. So by being able to do that and properly incentivize people, now you have fair access to liquidity. You have different range of borrowers, and this just creates a healthy market overall. This is what we're trying to do on the Kava network with Hover. And by getting all these participants involved, it actually allows you to spread out these APYs accordingly to everybody else.
That makes sense. And what are your thoughts about the current state of the crypto market? Where do you think it is? Where do you think we are going over the next 6 months to a year? Yeah.
I think that not from like a price perspective, right?
Just overall perspective.
The amount of wallets are growing. I mean, you have all this attraction with the ETFs being filed, and you have a lot of this retail attention thinking that crypto and digital assets are a real asset class, people would say, right? People be like, oh yeah, gold was here, tech stocks are here and things like that. And they all have ETFs. And now they're seeing, oh, I see digital assets as another probable ETF, right? First could be Bitcoin and larger tokens, right? But as people start looking into crypto, it's like, oh, seeing what's more than Bitcoin, or like, is there any more types of digital assets? Then they'll start kind of going into this rabbit hole. Because you kind of understand how tech is separated into different categories, right? Like you have like fintech, you have like medical healthcare tech and things like that. I feel like people are eventually going to start classifying this from on like the crypto side. You know how like CoinMarketCap has that, CoinGecko has that. Like, oh, this is an exchange token. This is a lending protocol token and things like that. I feel like there will be further classifications of these assets. And I mean, even if you saw from like the XRP news, right? How XRP is not a security, but except for the issuance, and that was the security.
It felt like it was the other way around. Shouldn't it be the other way around? Like, just it's like talking about XRP. I don't know that that if they are selling it to what do you call like larger players, I thought that's what was considered a security. In fact, shouldn't it be that if they're selling it to unaccredited users, that should be something that gets them in trouble, not selling it to sophisticated users? I don't know.
Because when they're selling it to sophisticated users, for example, right? Usually this would be kind of like, remember those SAP agreements from back then? Yeah. So when you have that in an investment contract with an institutional counterparty, that's when you can say like XRP was being sold as a security, right? But then there was something called programmatic selling, and that was when the founders were selling off into like third parties and exchanges and things like that. And since there was no like considerable counterparty, it wasn't being considered security when XRP was sold that way. So I mean, and even when they look at XRP itself, people can classify it as like a commodity or a currency or like a payment, but they didn't see XRP itself as a security. So I mean, that was pretty interesting, right? Considering we both came out from like the ICO phase. I'm pretty sure you remember that.
Yes. Oh, I remember the whole ICO boom and stuff. And it was crazy, that ICO boom of the 2017, which was pretty much like a 2021 NFT bull market.
Yeah, I mean, don't you remember EOS? Yes. I forgot how many billions they raised.
Yeah. What happened to that? to eat?
I'm not sure, actually. I haven't even looked at their chart for a while, but it's
There was
just.
EOS and Tron, and a lot of these were really, really big back then. Litecoin was very big.
Wow. At the peak of 2018, they did around 3.3 billion volume in 24 hours. That's huge.
That is massive. And it feels like that apart from Ethereum, Bitcoin, and the stable coins and XRP, no one else is there in the top 10, top 20. They all have changed so much.
Yeah, I mean, even when you remember Feather Coin and Color Coin back then, definitely has changed since then, right?
Yes.
Now we're getting a bit more sophisticated now, I feel like, where we have tested a lot of things, and I feel like that
Yeah.
these past few years have just been like DeFi summer. We're able to test a lot of, okay, how do you create safe financial protocols? And like everyone's always talking about, okay, you can kind of get rid of the middleman, right? You can kind of replace it with smart contracts,
Yes.
replace the bank teller, for example, and have it so that it's like a programmatic contract, because they're both just following protocol, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like that you had a lot of testing back then, and you had a lot of, okay, this has been pretty much validated, and now this has kind of become the de facto. And now you see people building on top of it, right? You see things that are pretty popular now, like liquid staking tokens, right? Or liquid staking
Yes.
derivatives. And you're seeing a lot of hype towards that, but you're building that from having priorly built kind of like financial primitives or DeFi primitives. And then you're just building on top of that. So I feel like that it's, yeah, like where this market is going is that, hey, you're going through a lot of the trials and tribulations that is associated with kind of like the growing pains of DeFi. And now you're building things on top that either improve security, improve efficiency, and most importantly, like improving the UI UX process, because I think that retail
Yes.
users are facing a lot of pain just by getting your assets off a centralized exchange, and then you got to pick your browser-based wallet in order to actually interact with a lot of these projects that are on here, right?
I do think that, yeah, mobile still suffers. Mobile UX, UI, so many things in
Yeah.
this world are still browser-based, and most people live on their phones. It's like we are only getting to the small segment of the society, and it's something that similar trend I saw in gaming as well. That till you had gaming only isolated to desktops, powerful desktops, it had limited number of players. But as soon as you go mobile, you open it up to billions of people who are spending the time. You don't have your desktop everywhere with you when you're on bus, public transport, Uber, on toilet. You don't run around with your desktop or your laptop. So it's just mobile. How to be mobile first, and that's something that I think as collectively as if you're building things in this industry, we should look at is build mobile first for everything, or only
Yeah.
build for mobile, pretty much. Don't even build for desktop anything that we build. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we're trying right now, kind of looking at mobile first, and also looking at
Yeah.
just basically into like just kind of like having people into the ecosystem. I mean,
Yes.
we're trying our best right now with Hover. I mean, just to go back to that whole onboarding process too. I mean, you have to take your tokens and take them out of the exchange. You got to put it onto a MetaMask wallet. You got to
Yes.
change your RPC into the Kava ecosystem, and then you have to deposit your assets in. And after that, you have to be able to kind of manage your own assets and know when to like deposit, when to take it out of supply, when to leave the Genesis pools or something like that. So, I mean, you have a lot of these
There's a
kind
lot
of
of
these
friction. There's a lot of
blockages.
friction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So I'm just like, okay, like how do you make this a bit easier, right? Even when you're talking about, oh, how do you bridge an asset, right? Or
Yes.
why do you need to bridge an asset? People are just like, oh, like can I just use this Ethereum for your platform? You have to be like, oh
Yeah.
no, you have to use this Ethereum on the Kava network, right? And then now you have to teach them about bridging. So
Yes.
it's definitely it's a lot of friction right now for like the typical Web3 user, right? I think we're still in that early adopter phase in the
Yes.
in that chasm. I feel like we're still in this like early adoption, trying to get UI UX like proper, and being able to have that with the stringent demands of like what a digital asset really requires, right? I think it's a bit different.
I think, yeah, I mean, easier onboarding would be amazing that people can come and just use their credit card or just bank account, top of their account in one click. And like how easy it is to buy things off Amazon. It has to be that easy. In one click, you can do that. And on mobile as well, that you press one button and you've done that. And then you can see the different APIs if you do want to give that control. And it can be all automated. People save the best when it is automated. They have the worst saving rates when they're required to do things, let alone have so much friction. So it's not going to be mainstream until we can remove all this friction. That's just what I think.
I completely agree with that. I mean, that's exactly what's happening with Cosmos and with finding, you know, interoperability across chains, right? How can you expect a retail user to just be like, okay, now we got to bridge our assets over to this chain in order to explore this lending protocol? And it gets a bit, it gets extremely difficult for a brand new retail user that's looking to get in. So, I mean, even after you would get this, the ETF approvals, for example, and then you have people that are getting, they're getting exposure through the ETF. They're getting exposure through these means, like traditional finance means. And they slowly try to kind of like dip into Web3. This means they have to sign up via a centralized exchange and being able to offload assets there. They just have to kind of figure out themselves, similar to how we did, right? Like,
yes,
I'm pretty sure there was a lot of times where, oh, I sent to the wrong address, now it's gone, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as early adopters, we kind of felt like, okay, like this is part of the lesson, right? Yeah. This is kind of like a rite of passage in one way or another to just
to lose money
in your assets somewhere.
To lose money back in the days is part of the, as you said, part of the passage. Everyone has lost money. Everyone has lost their keys at some point. Everyone has done things with CeFi that didn't result into anything. So I've had experiences like that and stuff. But yeah, I have one question before I forget. And that is that apart from this friction, what is one of your biggest challenges at Hover? I mean, apart from removing friction for the end retail user. So as you grow Hover.
Yeah, I think that one of our biggest challenges would be effectively growing the ecosystem, right? We're always looking for borrowers. We're always looking for supply. There's a book called The Psychology of Marketplaces. Definitely, it's like a chicken and egg situation, right?
Yes.
You have to get these. And for us, like our ecosystem is still budding, right? We're still getting projects onboarding. We feel like that we're at the forefront and seeing whoever is deploying on Kava, we will speak to. I'll literally reach out and then try to grow the ecosystem that way, see ways that we can work together. But I feel like that one of our biggest challenges is that, right? We're actively pushing on trying to grow the ecosystem as well as growing Hover ourselves. So we're kind of like, we're trying to not constrain ourselves by the ecosystem that we're part of, right? By allowing cross-chain deposits and a lot more cross-chain interaction across the Cosmos ecosystem. But we're definitely pushing through and trying to grow that, right? Because if you look at it from like a 10-foot lens or something like that, you can see the Ethereum TVL is huge, right? There's a lot of protocols building on there. And I think for the Cosmos ecosystem, it does take a bit of time to scale up and ramp. But I think that that's one of the challenges for us, because we're also dependent on the types of applications that are developing on here, seeing how we can work with them. And I think that's what it takes for us to kind of grow our TVL too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It is such an uphill battle because you are going against such strong brand names. and that's what people have heard. It comes down to brand recognition. So kudos to that. I have a couple more questions before we get into just talking about whatever's happening in the market and stuff. And that is that, do you have an ask? Is there anything that you're, or if you had one ask, what would that be? Are you looking for investment? Are you looking for a team to hire? Anything else? Feel free to share.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Hover is doing a Genesis pool. Genesis pool is, just to break it down for you guys, it's where you're able to kind of deposit your assets into our pools. And we'll give you an APY. And this is based in our token. So we're rewarding early adopters by just depositing their assets onto our markets, and we're giving them an APY in our token for a certain percentage of time. The duration will last until our public sale, which will be also later in this year. And yeah, and I think that for us, we're always looking to grow community. We're always looking to chat with people that are interested in the Cosmos ecosystem, Kava, as well as Hover ourselves. So, I mean, being able to follow our Twitter and Telegram, those are things that we always appreciate. And that way you can also stay up to date with a lot of the things that we're doing.
Fantastic. Talking about the psychology of marketplaces, that book, are there any things from that book that you can share that you felt like are really productive or useful for you?
I mean, you just got to consider the users from both sides, right? For us in particular, we're looking at supply, people who are going to supply liquidity, right? This could be the foundation themselves. They have a large TVL. Also, people on the Kava ecosystem that are, as a byproduct, here to participate, builders and things like that. We're looking at that from like the supply side. And then you look at the other side of your market, and you have to really deeply understand who the persona and demographic is, right? Then this is in any marketplace, but for us in particular, as a lending protocol, we're looking at suppliers and borrowers. So now for the borrowing side, who would be necessarily borrowing assets? Mind you that we are over collateralized lending protocol. So that means you would have to have more than your initial collateral in order to borrow a different asset.
Yes.
Right? So we're looking at like different DeFi protocols, perpetual swap platforms and things like that. And just being able to work with them to allow them to work in a system that will ease the amount of borrowing that they do and will also give them reasonable rates. And having these two fill the gap allows other people to partake in the ecosystem, and it'll be a bit more, I guess, like more mature in a way. So that's kind of what's happening on our ecosystem right now.
Yeah, I know chicken and egg problems are really hard to solve because the demand doesn't come in because they don't feel like there's enough supply. Supply doesn't come in because they don't think there's enough demand. And Michael Siebel from Y Combinator and X-Twitch, he's got lots of interesting things to say about solving this. I've tried to solve this for different projects in past. A similar thing that we were talking about is like esports earlier on, and had the same similar sort of issue that you want enough tournament organizers, but then you also want enough tournament participants. Otherwise, people feel there aren't enough tournaments happening, and tournament organizers feel there aren't enough people to participate. So what's the point in creating it? So it is a very interesting problem, and that led me to develop sort of freestanding tools and other content that would provide value, so people would come for that and then start participating. So that could be one of the strategy for you guys. I don't know, having some other tools where people can, I don't know, come and calculate the type of APYs they can get on any lending protocol out there, or some sort of a micro tool that's for free that anyone can use. And that's how people come across Hover, doing that, using that. I don't know, I'm just throwing ideas out here.
Yeah, but that's really good. You're literally going through exactly what we're trying to do for customer acquisition and growth, right? Yes. Having a yield aggregator and being able to present that, or like in a very like simple tense, also being able to have, okay, so I'm going to have this Twitter account. That's literally like APY scanner, right? Where we'll look for opportunities that are in the markets, and obviously Hover being one of them, right? Yeah. And this not only gives you a very transparent view of what the average APY is in the DeFi ecosystem, but it'll also give you, like, for example, if we have opportunistic moments in our markets, then we'll be able to publish that, right? I remember Aquanow, one of these liquidity aggregators in Vancouver, actually, they released a DeFi funding index, and they also have rate benchmarks as well. And it's actually available on the Bloomberg terminal. So you could kind of see what the typical, kind of like the typical baseline rate is if you were to participate in DeFi protocols. So it's a very interesting way to see, okay, what is the benchmark? And then what is kind of like above and beyond that, or even if it's just like beating inflation in any case, right?
Yeah, Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. I love the API scanner idea because that is something that I would use totally, because then I can see who's giving how much API. Not that you should always go for the highest one, because you do want to be safe. You don't want to just throw your money down the drain, because there's so many. I'm sure there's so many scams in this space and all that. So I have to be really careful. I mean, that's just part of participating in DeFi, or part of decentralization. I think it's got good and bad. And the bad is that there is no customer service in DeFi. That you participate peer to peer something. There is no one there to hold your hand and stuff.
That's exactly what we talked about, right? About not
Yes.
having a middleman. Like, that's a good thing
Yes.
in some ways, right? If you want
Yes.
self-sovereignty, if you want that freedom, but it's also a bad thing, right? If you want to speak to the manager for some odd
Yes.
reason, or something happens to you, right? You
Yeah.
need some sort of like a counterparty to blame, right? If you are a
Yes.
retail, you need some sort of like refund policies. Like, how do
Yes.
you get like these type of kind of like consumer protection on DeFi? It's relatively tough because you're dealing with absolutes. You're absolutely sending this transaction out, or you're absolutely not, right? There isn't
Yes.
a in between, or like a rebuttal process, or like a refund process, or something like that, unless you are working with a centralized medium, or unless you're working with a centralized company. Like, and sometimes they can't even help you, right? For example, I think I sent funds to like Coinbase or something like that, and maybe if you send it to the wrong hot wallet deposit or wrong
Yeah.
address, even they'll tell you, hey, we can't do anything about this. We don't support this asset. So it's like, oh, even like when you're dealing in absolutes like that, even centralized companies can't help you sometimes, right? And that's just kind of the
Yes.
nature of crypto, the nature of blockchains, and how it's like you can't take things back in one way
How
or
do
another.
we, is there a way to overcome that?
I mean, it's just because of the finality of these things that it's hard for you to take it back, right? Once it's sent with confirmations, and then it's updated on the ledger, and it's just permanent, right? They're like the only way to overcome it that I see is probably like you're dealing with a centralized counterparty, right? If you have a centralized counterparty to deal hand things off chain, right? There's a lot of times where people are like, hey, we deal with a lot of transactions off chain. It's because they have a
Yes.
customer base, that people that subscribe to their service, and they get as a part of the system, right? You sign in with your email, you have a personal identifiable information about you. Now you have like an account inside their ecosystem, right? And now
Yeah.
they're able to, okay, party A is sending it to party B for as an internal transaction. You can make sure that that person matches up, and then okay, you have that
Yeah.
transaction sent, but it's off chain. So that means
Yes.
I have all the assets in the end of the day. I'm moving asset from person A to person B. And that's a centralized entity doing it. So now if you have disputes or rebuttals before they take it out on chain, you can actually solve that, right? So a lot of which is, yeah, maybe if you want someone to blame, you have a centralized entity that kind of manages your
Yes.
assets.
Yeah. That makes sense, and I can see why there would be an appetite for something like that. I was just trying to think, like, technologically, if we could do anything, like maybe there is some sort of a time lock, and then both of the parties have to agree that yes, this is correct. I got like 1% of the transaction, and then you could see that the other party got the 1%, and then the remaining 99% is unlocked. So you have some, I don't, it will make the transaction a lot more gas inefficient. But yeah, just trying to think, because I feel like we need to solve like real problems, because a lot of the Web3 doesn't solve real world problems. I mean, of course, DeFi does, because DeFi does give APY and allows you lending and borrowing and stuff that the regular market doesn't. And DeFi rates could be wildly different compared to the traditional financial ecosystem rates, such as that if it's 2% there, it could be 20% here, or it's 20% there and it could be 2% here. So if you do want that sort of a spread, then yeah, DeFi is a way to go. But of course, this is not financial advice. Do your own research. Be safe. Look
Of
into who
course.
is running. Yeah, as you said, everything that you said earlier, like that the smart contract is is audited, that you're participating in, that the team is docs, that they are people from the industry that have a reputation to protect and go the long term. So that is fantastic. So what's your vision for Hover? This is my last question. Where do you see it going over the next year or two? What would you like it to achieve?
Yeah, so I mean, we're super excited about the development of Hover. We are we're having our Genesis pools that allows people to deposit and earn early yield. We're having our public sale. So hopefully we can close on a few of the larger interested parties. And afterwards, we're going to look at centralized exchange listings through various ecosystems and exchanges. And we're super excited about just being able to launch our protocol and be able to get it working. We have a lot of interesting token economic features that we're hoping that our holders would be able to benefit from, right? One of which is actually distributing a portion of our protocol earnings back to the holders themselves. So we have some sort of a bonus that for some of the revenue that we make as the protocol, we're distributing it back to holders that have, for example, KYC'd on our platform.
Yes.
And we'll allow them to earn some portion of that. We allow them to vote. We allow them to get discounts and rebates if they were being liquidated. And I think that having a more complex and more integrated system at Hover actually just helps the growth of the Kava ecosystem. Because now they're Hover is helping me in terms of being able to lend out my assets, or they're looking to borrow. And I think in the future, how can you integrate these concepts of borrowing and lending into other sorts of decentralized finance, for example? Can I use the amount that I'm earning to drip fund a project that's coming up? Or something like that. Being able to use this yield or use this proposed yield in different ways to allow other people to grow. I think that's kind of the incentive that we want to have, I guess, in the end. But we're super excited. I mean, our launch is pretty much coming underway, and we're just excited to meet everybody that's part of the ecosystem and grow that way.
Oh, that's fantastic. I will share a link to Hover everywhere this goes underneath the recording and the description, so they can reach out to Hover. What about you? What platform are you active in? Where should I link people to find what you're talking about and all that? Is it Twitter or LinkedIn or any other platform? Feel free to share.
Yeah, funny enough, I'm on LinkedIn.
Yes.
Funny enough, and I'm LinkedIn.com/IN, and then I got Vincent-Wu. I was the first Vincent Wu. I'm also frequent on Twitter. You could probably find me commenting underneath all of Kava's posts and all of Hover's posts as well. So, yes. I mean, you could definitely find me there. But I mean, I typically use LinkedIn. A lot of the inquiries I get are super, super related to crypto. So I'm happy about that.
Oh, that's fantastic. So yeah, any crypto related inquiries, questions, reach out to Vincent. I'll put a link to his social profiles underneath. I'm mainly on LinkedIn as well. Like, I only have time to do one social media because so busy working with two different startups and stuff, helping them grow and all that. So yeah, I do look forward to the ABY scanner, because that is something that I'll totally really use. Kind of sounds a bit like DAP Radar.
Yeah,
because I had them on the podcast as well, people from DAP Radar, just to see what the industry is doing, because they have so much data of everything that's going on with different dApps and DeFi and Web3 gaming and everything. So yeah, I'd be keen, and it would be great to have an chart over the time, what happens in the bull market to the APYs, and what happens in the crypto winters to the APYs and all that. So over the years. So yeah, I would love to see a product like that just for community good, kind of social good.
Yeah, for sure. I'll share some afterwards as well. And it might pique your interest. I mean, we're having a lot of these, now that we have financial derivatives on chain, we can also have fixed rate APYs and things like that. So it really takes out a lot of the uncertainties that you're dealing with for suppliers and lenders, right? So that's definitely coming in the pipeline. I mean, you will see this on Hover pretty much in the future. Yeah, we're super excited to be able to kind of bring these developments as we move forward.
Oh, fantastic.
We plan to make it so that we cater to a lot of the DeFi native retail, and also people that are just kind of like dipping their toes in for the first time. So I mean, we have a focus on a lot of this as we continuously try to scale up.
Oh, that's fantastic. So wish you best of luck, Vincent. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, and look forward to the success of Hover and everything that you are building.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time, Sam, and it's been a pleasure as well.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening or watching this episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. By now, you know the drill. Leave a comment or share this episode with a friend and leave a review. I would love to hear from you. So that's why my DMs are open. Reach out to me, especially if you are a founder building a product in Web3. Then I would love to hear from you. What are your challenges? Is there anything that I can help you or my community can help you with? Thank you once again and wish you best of luck in building your startup or your project.